This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply that proves that award season is a year-round event. Oscars are over, but we are back with so much to talk about. I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here with Vanity Fair's film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello and welcome to the off season.
Hello. Aren't you feeling off? Do you feel relaxed?
I feel ready.
Okay, good. Vanity Fair's digital director, Mike Hogan.
I'm never relaxed.
I haven't relaxed
in about 6 years.
No, there's no time. And we're joined today by Deciders, Joe Reed.
Hello.
Joe.
Thanks for having me back. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, we lost a Joanna, but we gained a Joe. I feel like that's it's a trade we'll work
keeping
with.
Keeping that world in balance.
Before we get started this week, I just want to say that we have chosen our winners for our Blu-ray giveaway. We have three winners who will get Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Hacksaw Ridge, and Hell or High Water all on Blu-ray. We've gotten in touch with the winners, so if you've heard from us, congratulations. But if not, we have another giveaway that we can offer. We have three copies of 20th Century Women on Blu-ray, which was not a Best Picture nominee, but should have been. It got an original screenplay nomination. It's a really terrific movie. And this process for entering is the same as last time. If you left a review already for the previous Blu-ray giveaway, you'll automatically be entered. But if you haven't left us a review yet, now is a great time to do it. Just leave us a review and include your Twitter handle in the review so that we can get in touch with you. And you'll be entered to win a Blu-ray copy of 20th Century Women. Thanks to everyone who entered. We got a really incredible number of reviews. They are so helpful to us for finding new listeners. And hopefully not only did you enter, but you told your friends and, tell your friends to enter to win a Blu-ray. Thanks again for entering and good luck with this one. So, Joe, if you're here and it's March, that means it's time to predict next year's Oscar winners.
It is. I'm like the palace guard at Buckingham Palace. I'm always I'm always there. I'm always at the ready.
Well, we brought you on last year because you published your Oscar predictions for 2018 last week on Decider.
I sure did.
And we did this last year.
Not full, but like some.
Yeah.
Starting the conversation.
Starting, exactly.
You're setting the table.
Well, we basically have to have you here because even if we wanted just to talk amongst ourselves, none of us would have any idea. Like, you were the person who's willing to look far enough into the future to do this.
I was the one who back in December started making a spreadsheet full of, like, everything that I could think of for 2018.
But it makes sense because you get so sick of the current crop that you're like, all right, let's just think about a whole new set of movies.
Exactly.
And
it's, it's like opening, like, a brand new Christmas present where it's just like, oh my God, all these things that I can think about that I didn't.
Yeah.
Well, but before we get to open next year's Christmas presents, we have to go back and look at last year's presents that we broke. And we professionalized a little bit. We have clips from last year's episode where we brought you in to
God
talk
bless.
About your predictions. And I went and listened to it. I don't know if you guys remember what we talked
about.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, Alana has some of these queued up. So let's hear what we were really optimistic about this time last year. There's this Michael Fassbender, Alicia Vikander movie that I feel like we should have our eye on.
Yeah, The Light Between Oceans. I think there's a lot of these sort of early Oscar predictions come down to like, okay, what elements do they have going for them? So Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender are the two leads. They were both nominated this year. Oscar, they're on Oscar voters' radar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a romantic drama, and it's based on a popular novel. So like those are all elements that sometimes lead to Oscar success.
All right, Joe, you were appropriately skeptical about
Life
Between Oceans.
I was a little skeptical about that one. Not enough to not have it lead discussion.
I was like huge for that. I was like, that's going to be at Cannes. It's going to be this huge thing. And it was just...
Was it not at Cannes?
No,
And it opens
Labor Day weekend,
right before the Toronto Film Festival. And it was
during
so
the Telluride Festival.
But I think we've always been waiting for Derek C. in France to have his big sort of like breakthrough.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of reservation, if only because that's a movie that has all the elements on paper. It's one of those great, like, looks good on paper movies.
Yeah.
And I think, especially now in the wake of Moonlight, looks good on paper doesn't get you as far as
also, you know, sort of period, dramatic, epic, literary kind of things. Like, that's like old Oscar fare. I don't know that actually that type of movie is really a given anymore.
You have to do something more with it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, the Academy that gave Best Picture to Moonlight, we can't just assume they're going to check the box for something like that automatically anymore.
Well, it's interesting because I actually liked it. I thought it was kind of good.
I liked it too.
But what is it? It just didn't have that oomph, like nothing.
It didn't have any kind of X factor, like to use a very sort of tired buzzword, but like it didn't have any kind of hook to it that made it above and beyond. It wasn't
even
Alicia
Vikander's
best
performance.
Even though
it had this real life couple who are incredibly attractive and Oscar nominated. Like,
sure,
it right.
of course.
Like it should have.
And where they wore such nice sweaters.
I know.
The sweaters were
the
really
cable
very good.
Covered
they should have
in salt water.
Leaned into the sweater thing.
Yeah.
There's that Michael Keaton movie, The Founder, that comes out in August.
Oh,
the help slot.
In the help the butler
right.
slot.
And I have a feeling that they're going to want to push him for an acting award. And also, Laura Dern plays his wife in that. And those are the kind of movies where, like, great man has an idea and also has a wife. And, like, it's, like, depressing. Do you know what I mean? It's depressing and it's a little cynical, but, like.
But it could also be the Greg Kinnear windshield wiper movie.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
That's all flash true.
So was The Founder the Greg Kinnear Winch away from me?
Score one for Richard on that one.
Boom. Flash of genius. That was my flash of genius. Uh-huh. That movie. Where did that go, Joe? What happened?
Well, it got moved to the hinterlands of December, like late December.
Box Office Mojo lists its release date as January 2017. Like, it just barely showed up.
It got
up.
The most qualifying of qualifying runs. And ultimately, I mean, this was the movie that was the other Weinstein Company movie that wasn't Lion. And I think once they figured out that Lion was the one they wanted to go for, The Founder got stashed away pretty
This happens
severely.
With the Weinstein Company pretty often. Or I mean, I guess it happens with lots of people where they realize they have one contender and the other one just kind of has to.
Like, and I think budget demands, you know, like they have to focus resources on. The thing about The Founder is that it's not bad. It's actually,
I
brought a screener home over Christmas to watch them. It was great for my parents. You know, it's a kind of very parent-friendly movie. I don't know. Keaton's good in it. And then there's this weird thing where you think you're like rooting for him and then he slowly becomes this villain. So it has an interesting kind of arc to it.
You're not the only one I've heard that's said good things about Keaton, especially in that movie, which makes it's like Best Actor felt fairly thin this year, right?
Yeah.
Am I the only one who felt like that? Seems a little bit strange that
just got completely just removed.
Yeah, like the Captain Fantastic slot seems like it easily could have gone to Michael Keaton.
Absolutely.
If they'd wanted it. Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait for Keaton in the Spider-Man movie. Maybe that'll be.
Yes.
Do we know why it moved to December? Was that just a...
I think it moved to December initially because they thought they were like, okay, this has legs, right? Or
they thought it was an Oscar, more Oscar-y.
Yeah, because it was originally like in that like help slot in the summer.
Right.
Yeah.
The help slot is
and
also
then in
like
that...
the shitty movie slot. It's like the help and 2 million movies that never got Oscars.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Suicide Squad, excuse me, won an Oscar.
True.
Oh, that's right. So I'm coming to you from Uruguay, by the way. Okay. All right, let's see what we got wrong next.
La La Land just got moved. The Damien Chazelle musical starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone just got moved to a December release date, which to me sounds like an indicator that they think it's really good and that it could be an awards play.
I was saying before we started recording, I won't name names, but an inside source told me that it's, quote, a masterpiece.
Well, Joe, well done.
I can't take credit for La La Land. I feel like we all had a little bit of an eye on La La Land. I know Richard definitely had an eye on La La Land.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend who was a publicist at Lionsgate at the time, and he was sort of feeding me little whispers here and there, and the word was that it was great.
So. I feel like once that release date got changed, everybody kind of snapped to
I think this time last year was when it got changed, and like everyone within Lionsgate finally realized what they had, and then we all said, okay, that's what they've got.
And that's another one where it's just like, oh, a musical about Hollywood. This is obviously going to be up someone's alley. So.
But that tells you how well they played it, that in March of last year, we had our eye on it, and that it never fell. I mean, it did start to feel like the juggernaut toward the end, which is part of the theory of why it lost Best Picture, but...
Sure, but it still won 7 Oscars.
Yeah.
I turned the show off after they...
Then I would look at something like the new Ang Lee movie, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which is about a soldier who's come home from the war, and it like it's so Americana. It has to do with like halftime at a Dallas Cowboys football game. You know what I mean?
Joe, my favorite part of this that we didn't clip is that you were really going for the Vin Diesel surprise Oscar campaign for the
I thought I was on to something, you guys.
I mean, you gotta go big or go home, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, and if that was a bigger, more substantial part, and if the movie was better, and if
anyone had seen it.
You know, once
if it didn't hurt your eyes.
Right.
To watch it.
Oh, God. But, like, put Vin Diesel in an Oscar movie at some point. Like, that's a good story.
He's going to host next year, and then you'll be vindicated. So don't worry
over the,
about
over the Rock's dead body.
Oh, right. I was about to say, right. The Rock is not going to let that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, Billy Lynn, man, that was a movie that got a lot of hype. It was at New York Film Festival. It was, you know, it had to screen on these particular projectors or whatever for that frame rate business. And then it just belly flopped in this way. The trailer for that movie was so beautifully. I mean, we hadn't seen the trailer.
I was very excited
by this time last
movie.
Year. But like when it came out, I think over the summer, I was just like, oh, man, this is going to be it. But
it was ambitious, but it's, you know.
A noble experiment.
Yes.
Something about the frame rate made it feel like a movie you had to watch in elementary school. I don't know. There
totally.
Was just a very. Yeah. It was also the tone of it. It was just a weird movie.
It felt to me. It felt like the frame rate aspect made it seem like the movie that plays before like a motion ride. Like at
a
speech,
right.
You know,
right. Or like when you're gonna be on a jury that day.
Right.
Exactly.
Like an Epcot like Center Orbach Expo or something like that. Something. Yeah.
No, the nice thing is that Ang Lee tends to follow up his flops with huge hits. He made Hulk and then Brokeback Mountain, and he made Taking Woodstock and then Life of Pi. So he's not out. I think.
Oh,
he's
I don't
got
think
two Oscars. Yeah,
he's on a weird rhythm.
You've got a movie called Lion that is coming out in late November. And again, like, not every movie that Harvey Weinstein gets behind gets pushed because, like, we saw what happened with Southpaw.
Yeah.
But he's been somebody who's been successful with the Oscars before, obviously. So that's at least something where you know it's going to be on voters' radars.
So as we talked about, Lion was the movie that the Weinstein Company decided to back. That was a good call on your part, Joe.
Yeah, that one was one of those that, you know, looked good on paper that actually paid off.
Yeah. And they had been promoting it at Cannes the year before, you said?
Oh, right.
Then?
Yeah. So the Weinstein Company did a presentation in May at Cannes of 2015 where they showed trailers. And some of them have not even come out, like Tulip Fever. Is that? Yeah.
Tulip Fever.
But yeah, there was a trailer for Lion.
This had Oscar buzz for the future.
It's waiting there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's queued up.
Well, we should mention that Joe had... Did we mention Joe's This Had Oscar Buzz Tumblr?
I mean, no.
People who listen to the show long enough will know.
Yeah, Billy Lynn was on there for sure. Yeah. Light Between Oceans was on there for sure.
But yeah, so Lion is interesting because it was at Toronto and it got good notices out of there, but it was by no means the big movie from that festival.
Right.
How do you think it stayed in the consciousness? Was it just like a good screener campaign or what?
I think it was a smart campaign. I think it's a movie that... That ending is such an emotional sort of wallop that it stays in your mind after you've seen it. It makes you feel good. It's sort of – that's more of the traditional – and I don't think Lion is a bad or cynical or sappy movie, but it's one of those movies that does push those buttons when you think of the traditional Oscar voter in terms of uplift, in terms of, you know, that kind of a story.
Well, in a year where – diversity was like a hot button issue and in some cases a combative issue. Lion was there to be like your warm, fuzzy, friendly, diverse movie.
Sure.
And without
globalization as a
kindly
thing that
white people.
Families together.
But without kind of shying away from the complications of that, you know, you have these scenes with Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman where they're kind of wrestling with him being an Indian kid who's grown up with this white family. So it's there. Yeah. It's not trying to gloss over it the way that you
and
might
one
Hollywood
kind
too.
Of super refugee child and one like very complicated refugee child.
Right. The goofus and gallant of
And it was Google propaganda, which, you know, never hurt anybody.
We talked about Birth of a Nation at Sundance when Richard was there. It got bought for huge money. Obviously, that's one of the big ones on everyone's radars. I think it's set for an October release date, like around the same time that Fox Searchlight opened 12 Years a Slave. Do I have that right? I mean, our prediction when we've been talking about the whole Oscar So White thing is that there's going to be a big push for movies with not all white casts for once. Is there anything else on your radar that you see kind of bubbling up in that trend? So Birth of a Nation, I think we discussed a lot of what the hell happened there.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that even when we had this conversation last March, like Richard, you had seen it at Sundance, you didn't think it was a great movie, but it felt inevitable at that point.
Oh, 100%. I mean, anything I said or wrote back then was like, oh, well, that'll be in nominated for Best Picture for sure. And, you know, that was not knowing anything about Nate Parker's past. But like, yeah, I think that it is possible to be that epically wrong about something, you know, even if you like follow this stuff closely.
Well, but there's a mirror universe out there where The Birth of a Nation is made by exactly in the same way by somebody who isn't Nate Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be fascinated to see how that Oscar year turns out, because I think without that.
Or in which Nate Parker doesn't commit crimes in his past or something.
Something where that element isn't present.
Yeah.
I'd be really fascinated because I think the reappraisal of The Birth of a Nation still happens, but probably not as severely. And the story about that movie becomes totally different.
Oh, yeah. I really think people should have seen it. And people obviously were just completely turned off and nobody watched it. And once there was all the kind of grossness on the one side of the backstory, and then the audiences never came out to support it, it right. was too easy for everybody to just dismiss it and say, there's too many other movies to think about here.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame because, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but it's an effective movie.
I think it's a movie that's worth seeing. Yeah. I don't think it's that good, but I think it's worth seeing.
Well, and I think it's also a story that, like, I didn't know much about Nat Turner, so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is as good a time as any to say that in our entire conversation last year, we made no mention of Moonlight. None of us knew Moonlight was coming at all.
I had actually, in doing my big sort of year-ahead research, I remember I had come across Moonlight, and I had seen that it was this director who had been acclaimed for a small little movie, and this is another small little movie. And I literally remember thinking, like, that could get, like, an Independent Spirit nomination. Like, that would be great. Good for that. Never imagining that a movie that small and that sort of, you know, about what it was about, at least in the synopsis that I had read.
I mean, I feel like I only heard about Moonlight a couple weeks before it premiered at Telluride. Like, a friend who works for a magazine, so he gets to see things, like, way in advance. Yeah. I mean, I guess I work for a magazine, too. But, like, but he, you know, on the print side, he was like, oh, there's this little movie that's going to be at Telluride. You have to go see it. Like, whatever. But it was really late. Breaking that movie, like, on people's radar. So, but I guess you spotted it, but didn't seem possible that it could.
Right. And spotted it in a very sort of wide canvas research kind of.
But it's very interesting how it feels like more so nowadays than in the past that enthusiasm for an underdog can propel, you know, political candidates, movies to, you know, a place that wasn't as possible in the past. I don't know if that's a social media thing or digital media or what it is, but you know, it was a little bit like the Bernie of, I mean, leaving aside whatever complications are there.
No, let's have this whole conversation.
It felt like the Bernie of this year where people were, and that actually, where he actually won.
It feels like passion means more than even, it counts for more, maybe.
Yeah, well, Oscar season's long, you know, like Telluride to Oscar night is 6 months. You got to have people who really want to keep those fires going.
Although, God, time was, like, we'd still be a month away from the Oscars if we were, like, 20 years ago. Can you imagine?
Oh, holy cow.
I know.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Oh, you mean because when they aired, they were, like, late March?
They were late March. There were Oscar ceremonies that were in April.
But wouldn't they have,
horrifying.
Like, it's like, wouldn't they have just started thinking about who might get nominated, like, today? They'd be like, oh, yeah, the Oscars are a month away. Yeah, should we think about
the seven people who decided who won the Oscars got in a room together?
There's a Tupac Shakur biopic that's coming out. Feels like it's shaping up to be a kind of Straight Outta Compton play.
So, Joe, you also mentioned this Tupac Shakur biopic last year. What the hell happened to it?
I have no idea. It'll turn up probably on maybe even television at some point. Well, I think I was very, very much into what's going to be the Straight Outta Compton of next year. Falling into that trap of the next year has to be exactly like the year before.
And people are already looking for next year's Moonlight or La La Land, which are not going to happen.
Well, there could be a next year's Moonlight, but it's going to be it'll come in a totally different package and a totally different, you know, way to compare to Moonlight.
Might look like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. That's right. That Bernie Sanders documentary is going to be fantastic.
What the heck is the United Kingdom?
Well,
that's another one. That screened at Toronto. That was the romantic drama
with Rosamund Pike
and David Oyelowo, which I think just got dumped into theaters last month.
No, Joe, you were really bullish on David Oyelowo because he was in that in Queen of Katwe.
Right.
You look at David Oyelowo this year, who has a lot of opportunities to get noticed.
I mean, Queen of Katwe had its moment, you know, it came
out.
That's
a movie that probably should have gotten a little bit more attention than it got. That's a good
Queen
movie.
Of Katwe. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it was a nice movie. Yeah. And full of good performances, including him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It just wasn't his year, I think.
David Oyelowo, his time's coming.
His time will
come. The fact that he didn't get that Best Actor nomination for Selma, I can't be the only person who's still mad about it.
No, it'll come around for him, I think.
Will Smith is going to be in a movie at the end of the year called Collateral Beauty. That's another sort of end of the year. Who knows? It could be
Concussion.
Right. Exactly. It could be. But it's there's a lot of stars in that. I want to say Kate Winslet is in that one.
Collateral Beauty, guys.
My favorite movie of the year.
Did you see it?
No, I never
did. Did anyone see it?
I did.
I wrote a sort of defensive review of that movie. I mean, Joe, I think that we talked about earlier with Light Between Oceans about how the traditional Oscar fare, that the kind of idea of that is changing. I mean, do you think that Collateral Beauty falls into that kind of rubric?
Well, sure, because you look at that synopsis and you see that Will Smith is the star and you think, oh, well, Pursuit of Happiness worked well. And this is a very kind of Pursuit of Happiness-esque movie, except it's not. Like, Pursuit of Happiness had the true story angle to it, which I think probably helped it more. Collateral Beauty is that same sort of manufactured uplift to it. Mm-hmm. That's one of those movies where, like, as soon as you see the movie, you're like, yeah, there's no way this is going to get
right
Oscar nominations. Right. Yeah.
I knew that as soon as I saw the trailer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, even the trailer. Yeah.
It was like Cloud Atlas meets, I don't know what.
Oh, Justin Forsberg.
Yeah, 7 Pounds.
It was also yeah. secretly a Christmas movie, and Christmas movies don't do well.
Oh, it was a Gary Marshall directs Cloud Atlas. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah. Well, it's a reminder that release dates aren't fate, you know? That December release date does not automatically make Passengers or Patriot's Day.
There's
or
a movie
else.
Coming out this December that Richard and I have talked about a little bit, maybe.
Well, we'll discover
we'll get
that.
Into that. Yeah.
Okay.
Andrew Garfield is in a couple movies at the end of the year that I think could be the stuff of his first Oscar nomination. He's in the new Martin Scorsese movie, which sounds like it's a supporting role to Liam Neeson, although it's tough to tell.
This is Silence?
This is Silence. This is the movie that's set in Japan.
But monks
it's
and
about
like
monks.
The 12th century, somewhere way back in time.
Exactly. Liam Neeson, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver are in that thing. Andrew Garfield is also the lead actor in a movie called Hacksaw Ridge about a conscientious objector in World War II. That is directed by, everybody get ready, Mel Gibson.
Woo!
Yay.
Joe.
For all the crap I got wrong, I'm going to take full credit for this one.
Yeah.
I think you should take full blame. I think this is your fault.
Okay.
You willed this into existence.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I spoke it and the world made it flesh. Yeah.
I mean, Hacksaw Ridge, not that it's a bad movie. Andrew Garfield is great in it, and, you know, but.
He got nominated for the wrong movie, I will still say. But, I mean, when you're wrong 78% of the time, you're right 22% of the time.
And we were just so not ready for the Mel Gibson comeback. Like, it just felt like so unlikely and it'd be so difficult. And then it was just so easy.
Well, and that was another one that happened all at once, where all of a sudden the year seemed like it was mostly done. And I was like, well, I guess that Hacksaw Ridge thing isn't going to happen. And then all of a sudden it was there. And all of a sudden the Golden Globes were like, yes, Mel Gibson. And then, you know, the ball started rolling.
Well, you know, redemption narratives are like, in Hollywood, are like coal in Appalachia. You know, the town cannot run without them. So when they see one in real life, well, both. Yeah. So, you know, they love a redemption tale.
Yeah. God, the fact that Lionsgate had that and La La Land, I mean, that's kind of disproving the theory that you have to pick one horse. Like, they rode both of them incredibly well.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited for the Oliver Stone, Edward Snowden movie. Although, talk about like a director who used to be like catnip for Oscar and has really, really become not that.
Well, we have to wait for the Oliver Stone comeback,
I guess. I didn't hate Snowden, but that's another one where as soon as I saw it, I was just like, yeah, this isn't going to be an
Oscar
when
it got delayed a year.
Yeah, that's not a great sign.
Yeah.
Also, our entire understanding of Snowden has changed even after that movie came
Jesus.
Out.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
Kind of weird.
Yeah. Also, I think the window on Joseph Gordon-Levitt maybe has passed us by.
Yeah, you think it's already over?
Well, I don't think it's over, but I think we're already into like he's going to have to like steal our hearts again.
He's
you know what I mean?
Figure out his next thing.
Yeah, like it's. I think that you know his Gosling window is probably gone.
Huh, Gosling.
I mean, yeah. If you look at like you have The Walk and then Snowden, that's kind of a pretty heavy 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
But I think Gosling had a slump too. You know,
oh, he sure did.
So
yeah.
I think he, you know he's sort of back. But I think that what Gosling has done that maybe Joseph Gordon-Levitt could look to is he's returned to the sort of charming fall in love with him roles, and JGL could maybe do something.
He could
another 500 Days of Summer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to pause for a second to talk about hashtag Tripod, which hopefully you've seen on your social media feeds. It's this ongoing effort, not just to promote individual podcasts, but to promote the idea of podcasts. And we want to do it by having people tell their friends about podcasts that they love. The one that we wanted to talk about today is hopefully one that you know about already. It's called You Must Remember This. It's also a Panoply podcast. It's hosted by Karina Longworth, who's been a guest on Little Gold Men before to talk about her really incredible show where she digs up the secret and forgotten history of Hollywood's first century is the way she describes it. She was on a long hiatus and is back now with a series called Dead Blondes, which is exactly kind of as mysterious and sometimes tawdry as that sounds. The latest episode was about Marilyn Monroe. And even if you think you know everything there is to know about Marilyn Monroe, Karina makes it really fascinating. She's got this depth of knowledge that none of us can really equal on this show. So we just try to keep up with her level. So that's a show that I think that you guys would like. If you want to tell your friends about that show or this one or anything else you love, use the hashtag Tripod. That's T-R-Y pod. And try to introduce people to podcasts. Even if they don't know how to listen to podcasts, this is a way to let them know and then maybe show them how to download it and spread the word.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that.
We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great Chill being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
All right. Well, with last year finally in a rearview window, Joe, who's going to win Best Picture next year?
Oh, God. Put me on the spot. Well, this is the
thing. We bring you here
by the
for
way,
it.
Just know everything you say will be unearthed again a year from now.
Absolutely.
Well, it's funny because the movie that everybody sort of seems to be leading all these year ahead conversations with is Dunkirk, the Christopher Nolan World War II movie, because it's World War II, which is such an Oscar thing, because everybody seems to be expecting that Nolan will eventually get a Best Director nomination for something. That's one of those movies that I feel like that's the front runner that everyone's going to sort of use as the shield to sort of absorb all that Oscar talk. While
Even though
everybody
it's a summer
is,
movie, right?
Well, that's the thing. It's a summer, but I, you
so
know,
Saving Private Ryan
was also a summer movie. So I think that's the template that somebody's hoping to follow.
So I do, one thing about Dunkirk, well, two things. One is that if Harry Styles gets an Oscar nomination,
it's all over.
I'm going to pass out. From
you
joy.
And a lot of
he's going to be on this podcast as an Oscar nominee.
Don't even. but the other thing is I wrote about the trailer when it came out, I don't know, sometime in the fall of last year. And I got an email from the publicist at Warner Brothers, which is releasing the movie. And she said, could you change the wording of something? I had called it a World War II drama. And she said, it's an action adventure.
Oh, okay. So that could be telling
so
us
I don't
how
know
they're
what that means exactly. That might just
managing.
Be a marketing thing and not an actual content thing.
Sure.
But it was just an interesting sort of tweak because I had assumed seeing the trailer, I was like, oh, well, here we go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've basically just been expecting the Normandy Beach scenes of Atonement for an entire movie. That's the vibe that I'm getting from all the trailers.
Sure. And that God, that scene in Atonement is
it's great.
So fantastic. Yeah. And actually, Joe Wright has a movie this year, speaking of Atonement, that I've got my eye on. Maybe only for an acting play. Gary Oldman plays Winston Churchill in a movie called The Darkest Hour.
Yeah.
And
Ben Mendelsohn plays Hitler? Or we don't know what Ben
Mendelsohn's
plays.
In it. I don't know who he plays. I don't... That would be...
He should
remarkably
he might as well play Hitler might, at this point, don't well, you think?
He's been edging toward it.
Yeah.
Well, and Mendelsohn's another one who's just like seems to be creeping towards an Oscar nomination in every show that he's in.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think if there's already like publicity photos out there of Oldman in makeup.
I mean, Ben Mendelsohn won in
Churchill.
Sorry, but Ben Mendelsohn won an Emmy this year in Bloodline
for season,
like one flashback.
On. For a season where he was dead the entire season.
Right.
Like, it's insane.
Yeah, people are like gagging to give
he
him.
He plays King George VI, according to IMDb.
Okay.
It worked for Colin
is
Firth.
Is Joe Wright still in director jail? I mean, because he had a couple of high-profile misfires.
Really, just
well, just
or
the
one,
right?
I guess.
Yeah, a very large misfire.
I'm very eager like for it, us but... to forget about Pan, so maybe this will do that trick. I think he's a director for me whose pluses very much outweigh his minuses.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to be a return to a kind of... He always seems to make movies that seem like they're going to be very straight down the middle... into something not quite that. Anna Karenina, I feel like, that. Even his Pride and Prejudice had some
He loves a long take.
Loves a long take. Mm-hmm. I think he's an incredibly talented director. I think if there's a director who we're looking to maybe make a leap, that could be it. Even though this does seem like it could be just an actor's showcase for Oldman and perhaps Mendelsohn.
But we would have
said
that about the King's Speech a year out, so.
That's absolutely true.
Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. What else? Any other World War II movies we should be considering?
I mean, God, there's always World War II movies. I don't know. There's nothing quite so much like that. But I think if you're talking about directors who are sort of in the Oscar conversation, Garth Davis is making a Mary Magdalene movie.
Yeah, with Rooney Mara.
Garth Davis, who directed Lion.
Who directed Lion, yeah. Yes. With Rooney Mara as Mary Magdalene and Joaquin Phoenix as Jesus. So,
are you ready for Joaquin?
I am not.
Casey Affleck comeback, though, like the I'm still here gang is a back and forth.
That sounds like a Richard is sick and has to miss the screening kind of movie.
You all just grimace so hard.
Yeah. It's very Last Temptation of Christ kind of vibe to me.
But Joaquin Phoenix and both Mara and Phoenix have like been nominated or have been sort of angling toward it, but neither seem to really be into the whole scene of it, like a little reluctant to campaign and everything. Yeah. So I don't know.
I think the second that Rooney Mara decides she wants to campaign, I think is when she's going to get an Oscar. I think that's one where it feels like Hollywood is ready to sort of lift her up to that level.
She's already got two nominations. For Girl with the Dragon Tattoo when she was like basically a newcomer.
Yep. Got the Carol nomination.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like a lot of the big name directors, like Spielberg's doing Ready Player One, which wouldn't seem like an Oscar movie, but like if it's great, like that's the thing.
The book is really good.
Avatar didn't seem like, you know, an Oscar movie either. And all of a sudden people found it so impressive that there it was.
I think as science fiction, I think we're ready for science fiction to be pushing ahead. We're living in a science fiction world.
Gravity got us right to the brink of, you know, that kind of genre movie. Although again, like Gravity's not science fiction. Gravity is...
Yeah, I mean, we said that for Interstellar. Yes. Like, that was supposed to be, like, the big push, and that didn't, you know, back to Christopher Nolan.
I mean, I guess Arrival got a lot of nominations.
That's true. Yeah. I think you're right. I think we're getting very much closer to would it be our first sci-fi best picture?
Oh, God.
I know.
Wasn't Arrival nominated?
No, to win.
Oh, to win.
Probably 2001 didn't win. That's always like the furthest Star Wars back didn't that you win. Go.
Yeah.
If not, let's just say
and let other people yell at us later.
Well, Spielberg's actually interesting because he's been nominated for Best Picture a number of times, but he's gotten one Best Director nomination since he won for Saving Private Ryan. That was for Lincoln. So he's not as much of a slam dunk.
Yeah, he didn't get one for Bridge of Spies.
The kind of the Best Picture field kind of seems made to be like whatever Spielberg made, and then you know, like we'll make room for War Horse. But I'm intrigued by Ready Player One. I have a hard time imagining it as a good movie, but Tintin was great. So
that's the thing, is I think Spielberg, you can never count him out in any kind of way. Like, the you know, the BFG came and went, you know, more quietly than any Spielberg movie I can think of in recent memory.
I mean, it's really fun to do this and just kind of go down the list of directors who have exciting stuff coming. Like, I think Darren Aronofsky's Jennifer Lawrence movie, Mother.
I can't wait for that.
I mean, do we know anything what it's about?
It's very shrouded in mystery. One assumes that Michelle Pfeiffer is playing Jennifer Lawrence's mother.
Because
the title is Mother, exclamation point, and because it's Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
And she's someone to talk about, I think. She had a little movie
at Sundance. She's decided that she's going to be back.
Yeah, she had a little movie at Sundance that was like decently review, but she got good notices for it from a really interesting indie director. She's got this coming up. She's playing Ruth Madoff in an HBO thing directed by Barry Levinson.
Yep.
I mean, this seems actively like she's doing this on purpose. Right?
Yeah, I think she's got some fire in her belly.
Good,
this, which is good because
welcome back.
Yeah, it's always going to be a better Hollywood landscape when Michelle Pfeiffer is making movies. So I would definitely keep an eye on that, and especially her in that movie. Donald Gleason is also in that movie. So
my friend Donald Gleason?
I know.
Just looking down the director list, like Alexander Payne's got a movie coming.
Downsizing, right, with Matt Damon as the lead. And Alexander Payne has been a remarkably reliable Oscar presence since
Sideways. Yeah, like Nebraska got a Best Picture nomination.
And his lead actors are also, with the exception of Giamatti, like Clooney got it for The Descendants, and Bruce Dern got a nomination for Nebraska, and Jack Nicholson for About Schmidt.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, The Descendants almost beat The Artist.
That's
I mean,
the thing. And Clooney almost won a second Oscar for lead actor for that movie. So I would definitely keep an eye on Downsizing, even though the premise seems a little quirkier than his recent ones. It's about Matt Damon just wants to shrink himself down to 4 inches tall.
First sci-fi best
and
picture.
Kristen Wiig is the supporting actress in the movie, so like it feels like there's a quirk to it that maybe he's taking Payne back to his, you know, older sort of
like
Susan, you know,
Ruth days.
Yeah, perhaps. But again, he's become a very, you know, polished and accomplished director by now. So that's absolutely one to
another one. I don't know if it's going to come out this year, but it's certainly been on lists of like what might be at Cannes in May. Is Yorgos Lanthimos has a new movie, you know, who made The Lobster, called The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
The cast on that
is Nicole
Kidman,
Colin Farrell, and get ready, Alicia goddamn Silverstone.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really?
Isn't that amazing? I'm so excited about
that's
that.
That's great.
It's like, what could, I mean, maybe it's a tiny part. I don't know, but she's like third build. So.
And I mean, The Lobster got, you know, the screenplay nomination and made so much more money than you would have expected a strange little movie like The Lobster.
Yeah, The Lobster is a weird, I mean, I would not expect this to be any different. That guy makes weird movies.
But if Lanthimos is keeping on this trajectory, then.
Oh, God. If he can keep working with Colin Farrell like that, Colin Farrell always deserves better than what he gets. But with Lanthimos, he really seems to be doing it.
Yeah. I think this is one of the years where like actors are jumping out to me even maybe more so than directors. Like Saoirse Ronan's got a couple that are interesting. She's in an adaptation of The Seagull. And she's in...
With Annette Bening, right?
With Annette Bening. Yeah. She's in a Ian McEwan adaptation.
On Chesil Beach.
On Chesil Beach.
I read that book, which
that
is
book
like very...
That book is so punishing.
I mean, yeah, like Ian McEwan books are always like internal to the point that you're like, how can I make a movie out of that? But that one I really can't.
And her, of course, first Oscar nomination was for the Ian McEwan adaptation of Atonement.
And on Chesil Beach, its climax... let's just say I say that word literally in some ways.
Okay.
And also euphemistically. Like, it's, So
well,
it centers on something that's a little bit like, I don't know how that's going to look on film.
So speaking of which.
Gaspar Noé could have directed it. Let's hint him.
I think it would also probably be ill-advised to just disregard Sundance this year and Call Me By Your Name particularly. Because even though on paper that seems like not Oscar's thing. It's so sexual. It's so homosexual. It's
arty.
It's arty, exactly. But I think Moonlight teaches us.
Yeah, these are all the descriptors of Moonlight.
And the value of having a movie that you know people flat out love.
Yeah.
That audiences that have actually responded to and that critics have actively fallen over themselves for. That is like the bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, kind of. You know what I mean? Like that's no longer, I think, can we take a movie that is that enthused about and just be like, well, it's not Oscar's thing. Because you don't know what's Oscar's thing now.
I feel like a lot of it might come down to Luca Guadagnino. I don't know anything about him, really. He's Italian. Because, like, Barry Jenkins was really such an engine that drove Moonlight.
Sure.
He's so personable. Like, he was on our podcast.
That's
he was
an excellent
delight.
Point. Yeah.
So I hopefully the narrative can continue going that way. And he's, I mean, I think Armie Hammer is obviously a huge benefit to that movie.
But. Yeah. I might be living in kind of like a gay Twitter bubble, but like the anticipation for that movie seems big. And we premiered a clip on VF.com that did very well for us. And so I think you're right, Joe, that like when you have a movie that people do flat out love, and I adore that movie, you know, I saw it at Sundance, that matters a lot. I hope it has an awards push. I think they're releasing it in early fall.
I think it will definitely have a push. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Sony Pictures Classics has it, right?
Yeah.
Picked it up before Sundance,
And the publicists at Sundance, like, they told me, trust us. Like, we know that this is good.
So
We know the danger of fighting last year's war this year, but on the other hand, the enthusiasm. I remember seeing Moonlight even after it had screened in a few places and just thinking, wow, it'd be so great if that catches number 9 best picture nomination.
Well, and you guys made a very good point on this podcast a few weeks ago that I think really made a ton of sense, which is that because we're living in the up to 10 best picture era, now if a movie seems good enough to go for that number 9, number 8 slot, it's going to get a push, and then who knows? Then who knows how much that enthusiasm builds? And I think that's exactly what happened with Moonlight, where if it was just 5, maybe they were like, you know what? Let's, you know, don't throw good money after bad kind of thing, and just like manage our expectations more modestly. But because there's a best picture field now that can accommodate so many movies, you can go for it. And then if you can go for it, then all of a sudden people get a chance to really love it.
And then it becomes, I think, not just enthusiasm, but what's mobilizing the new voters, you know? Like for Moonlight, it was clear, I think.
It really almost was
a protest vote against everything that's happening in this country, you know? And so if you can kind of get people to rally around something like that, that can be very powerful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God knows what'll be happening to us this time next year.
Then I think also people are going to start to, I mean, they probably already have, but like, or, you know, figure out how to game the preferential ballot thing and, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's make more bold predictions for next year so we can use them to bludgeon ourselves.
Okay.
Todd Haynes is back. Are we going to get some Carol justice coming?
The interesting thing about the Todd Haynes movie is that the seemingly lead performance is a 13-year-old deaf actress named Millicent Simmons. And if you want to throw a dart at a board right
another
now.
Another movie like that.
And apparently the word is that that the movie is sort of two halves, and her half of the movie is a silent movie, essentially. all of which seems like a great way to shine a spotlight on a new actress. And
yeah.
if I'm going to be throwing some money on somebody completely unheralded, that might be where I would go. That's an Amazon Studios movie, which, you know, had such a breakthrough this year with Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
I feel like they've proven much more so than Netflix that they know how to release feature films that will get Oscar nominations.
Yeah, so, and Julianne Moore and Michelle Williams.
Julianne Moore and Michelle Williams. Yeah, I'm incredibly
the great Oaks Fegley from Pete's Dragon, isn't it? Who we've talked about on this podcast for some reason.
Do we know what Netflix has in next year's Oscar race? Anyone know off the top of their head? Because it does feel like Netflix
didn't
is,
they buy Mudbound?
So that's a good reason to talk about Mudbound, because it feels like Netflix, after seeing Amazon have their success with Manchester, Netflix also won an Oscar with White Helmets. But
they did. They're good with documentaries, because documentaries can get nominated and win just by streaming or being on television.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
OJ Made in America really shows you that. But I think Netflix is really going to be pushing hard to have their own spot in this. So
if Mary J. Blige can get a supporting actress nomination, I will be the happiest boy in the land.
Yeah. I think she's supposedly
very good, right?
We saw it. Richard and I have seen it, and we can discuss it. I think she could.
She could. She's not a huge part is one issue. The man who plays her husband is a bigger role.
Rob Morgan.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and the acting is really strong in that film.
Carrie Mulligan is very good. Garrett Hedlund is good.
Jason I think Clark, it's a real breakthrough for Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah. Yes.
But I think that at least from what I could glean from Sundance and the kind of chatter there was that this was much more about Dee Reese than it was about the actors.
Yeah.
The writer and director Dee Reese.
And as we discussed last week, the fact that there hasn't yet to be a Black Best Director winner, I think that momentum is willing to start pushing. I think Dee Reese is an incredibly talented director.
Yeah.
She's a Black woman. Like, there's a lot to... Mm-hmm. There's a good narrative behind her that if the movie really holds up, I think that could really push her into the race.
Well, and this brings up something, too, which is that 2016 was such a good year for diverse Oscar nominees.
Mm-hmm.
The movie slate for 2017 already seems like it's thinner in terms of... you know, just the movies out there that seem like they could be possibilities. So Mudbound, I think, is going to have a lot of light on it. But I think beyond that, just at a glance, there don't seem to be a ton of movies out there that could – I'm not saying we're going to end up with – God, if I can imagine if we backslid into another all-white asking slate. But like
– But it's also worth noting that Hidden Figures wasn't on our radar last year.
And
Moonlight wasn't on our radar. Yeah. Fences wasn't on our radar. Yeah. So,
right.
You know, it's –
There could be stuff.
Yeah.
What about this Kathryn Bigelow movie?
The Untitled Detroit Project. Yeah. That is definitely –
Which is such an elegant title. I love that.
I love that.
So Kathryn Bigelow and Mark Boal are doing a movie about the riots in Detroit in the 1960s. John Boyega is in it. John Krasinski's in it. I think Boyega is perhaps a lead and everybody else is sort of an ensemble, but again...
Jason Mitchell was in it, I believe.
Jason Mitchell,
who's so good in Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah. Jason Mitchell was the best one in Straight Outta Compton.
He was my favorite in that, too. Yeah.
There's a lot of
white people. Amazing in Mudbound.
He's also in Kong Skull Island.
So that could
Island,
be a big year for him.
Yeah.
He is in Kong Skull Island, him and Corby Hawkins.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of white people in this cast for a movie about the Detroit riots. It makes me, you know, thinking emoji. I hope that pans out okay.
Katie really is doing the thinking emoji right now.
It's actually a little interesting at home. Yeah.
John Krasinski, Caitlin Dever, who is in Short Term 12.
I love Caitlin
Will Poulter. So.
It's a very good, Jack that Rainer. Cast is, yes, a really good young actor cast that I feel like.
Yeah.
A bunch of people who are not household names, but maybe one or two of them could be after.
Let's just hope this isn't Bigelow's Stonewall.
Let's just hope. Yeah. I don't think she has a Stonewall in her, frankly. She has more restraint than Roland Emmerich.
Yeah. Jack Rayner is so great in Sing Street.
It's one of the two big untitled movies this year that I'm looking forward to. The other one being the Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah. Is that going to be out? Movie. Do we feel like it's definitely going to be
It's filming now, so who knows? But Daniel Day-Lewis in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie feels like as good
about
of
a... fashion.
What's that? And about the London fashion scene.
Like modern day London fashion scene?
I think it's
I
the...
I will show it I with my own hands.
But I'm not entirely
Thank
positive.
You. I can leave now.
Yeah, I mean, basically anytime Daniel Day-Lewis...
Like, write that in pencil at the very least.
Yeah. Is this the first movie he's made since Lincoln?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, you know, he followed up There Will Be Blood with 9, so...
Uh-huh.
You never know.
Brett, you mentioned Short Term 12, and... Destin Cretton is coming back.
With the Glass Castle.
Glass Castle.
Which I have not read, but I've heard very good things about that book. it seems like it could be like Brie Larson is the lead, seemingly the lead.
I think it's like a is it like a mother-daughter story?
Yeah, I feel like it's a book. For a friend of mine who had read the book said there's a lot to do with like flashbacks and that kind of thing.
It's Brie Larson and Naomi Watts.
Naomi Watts plays her mom, and I believe Woody Harrelson plays mm-hmm. her dad. I think both of those could be supporting actor possibilities.
A lot of books to read. I'm trying to decide if I want to read them or not. Yeah. Sometimes it ruins my enjoyment of a movie to have seen the book.
It can go either way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it briefly in your post on Decider.com about the 2018 Oscars. A Naomi Watts supporting actress win would be so exciting. I mean, she's been so deserving of it for a long time.
I agree. And she's already, she's a 2-time nominee already. Yeah. Didn't get nominated for Mulholland Drive, even though she was probably the best actress of the year that year. It would be good. I would be very much in favor of that.
Another person who already has an Oscar, but hell, you know, who cares? Well, actually, two other people. Is one, Charlize Theron has her Jason Wright movie.
Oh my God.
And she was so good in Young Adult.
So
with
good and it's, Young Adult.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the gang from Young Adult back together because it's Diablo Cody doing the screenplay. And also, Mackenzie Davis is the other actress in that movie. It's Charlize Theron and Mackenzie Davis.
Okay.
Mackenzie Davis is great. So
I can also...
It's called Tully, by the way, that movie.
Say just one word about War Machine. Is coming out based on The Operators by
Which
Michael
is
Hastings.
That is a Netflix movie.
It's a Netflix movie, yeah. I wouldn't rule it out entirely. I think it might play in as well.
It was David Michaud, who's like a really, you know, respected
director.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be a lot more of a comedy than it seems on paper.
Yep. I would say that's
And true. they've kind of removed it from the real story. They've changed the name of Brad Pitt's character, so it seems to be more fictionalized than maybe.
Yeah, they
we were
fictionalized
expecting.
It. There's only a couple of characters. I mean, Obama and Hamid Karzai basically are the only like.
It'd be weird if they were like a different black president.
Ben Kingsley's playing Hamid Karzai, which is interesting. Mm.
Who plays Obama?
They're just using like CGI basically.
Wise.
Jordan Peele.
Who was the other actor you want to talk about?
Fran McDormand.
Yes.
Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing.
The Martin McDonagh movie.
Missouri, Nebraska.
Oh, God, of course it's a Martin McDonagh title. I should have known.
Yeah.
What's that all about, Joe?
She plays the mother of a murdered daughter, I believe. Mm-hmm. Could be a son, but I think it's a daughter, who ends up taking out these billboards in her town to essentially shame the local sheriff into acting on this case.
Yeah.
And it's, I think Woody Harrelson plays the sheriff in that. So again, that's a couple movies now that Woody Harrelson could do a supporting actor nomination from. I think Martin McDonagh, not always reliable. He's done In Bruges, which, you know, was great. And
the greatest film ever.
Got Colin Farrell a Golden Globe. He also did Seven Psychopaths, which was not
my
favorite.
I think it's super underrated.
Oh, really?
I think it's a great movie.
Oh, I didn't care for it. Yeah. Okay. But I'm super looking forward to this. Anything that gives Frances McDormand a chance to have a lead performance these days.
Yeah, it's terrific. Super into it. So exciting.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to wrap this up by forcing everybody to predict what's going to win Best Picture just for the heck of it? Because could be right.
Yeah.
All right. Joe, can I make you start because you've already gone through this more than the rest of us?
I mean, gun to my head, which actually you can't see this, but Katie's holding a gun to my head. It's strange.
She's still doing the thinking emoji while holding
a gun emoji.
It's creepy.
The as yet untitled Detroit Project from Catherine Bigelow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, two Best Picture wins for Catherine
I know,
Bigelow,
that's the thing that would hold me back from that, but...
Why not? Mike, what about you?
Oh, I'll come back to me. I don't...
All right, I'm just going to pick Darkest Hour, because I am rooting for Joe Wright, and I really want...
You are in this together, Katie. This is good.
Yeah. The whole King's Speech comparison. I mean, it would be weird for two movies about King George VI to win Best Picture, but weirder things have happened.
Weirder things, yeah.
Okay, Richard, what about you?
Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah.
Sure. You know what? What the hell? Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
Garth Davis has momentum.
Yeah, he certainly does.
He's clearly talented, and the walk assance is coming.
The walk assance.
I'm going to say Ready Player One becomes the first sci-fi movie ever to win.
I like
Best
that call.
Picture.
Why not?
It's a bold call. I like that.
Next week, when Joanna's back, we'll make Joanna go on the record with prediction next week so we can all be out there together.
Yes.
And
we'll steal them and we'll put them in a safety deposit box. We'll not touch them.
And then we'll hand the wrong envelope to someone to read them to us when the time comes. Well, Joe, thank you for coming. You provide us a ton of information, even if we sit here and we'll eventually listen to all these predictions next year. And
We'll laugh. We'll have a good laugh
we'll
about
have
it.
We'll laugh.
Alicia Silverstone has her Oscar, and we're just,
God, perfect.
Can't wait.
God, that would be so great. Well, that does it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week. Joe will have back some other time. In the meantime, you can find us all at vanityfair.com. We're on Twitter at Little Gold Men, where we still love hearing from you. I'm glad that you're all invested in things and in listening to us, even though the Oscars are over. You can find us on Twitter, Richard.
Rylaws.
And Mike.
Mike_Hogan.
And Joe.
Joe Reed.
This episode was edited and produced by Alana Milner, and thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for the opposite of what we'll feel when we look back at these predictions next year goes to Richard Lawson.
Ba-boom! Flash of genius. That was my flash of genius.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.